on your birthday?
Yes. Less than 1%, perhaps. But yeah.
This is InfoCast 5000. Hey. Hi.
Everybody. Hey, everybody. It's me, Baron Malley.
And it's me, Sam Acuff.
And
we're not listening to you, camp.
Where am I camping right now?
You're listening to us, camp.
Is somebody out there listening to
us? We're camping in the studio.
Is?
with pit beef and beer.
That sounds fun.
And walls actually. And a roof and no tent.
I mean, what is camping?
Camping looks a lot like podcast recording for us. And this is Dirty Bits. Dirty Bits for refrigerators.
Welcome. Welcome to the Dirty Bits portion. You made it.
Yeah.
You climbed up the mountain and are joining us at our base camp where we are going to talk about...
Enough about the camping analogies. For anyone that doesn't know, welcome to Dirty Bits. This is where all of the extra information that didn't make it to the normal episode gets to be regurgitated in a non-formal format into your ears by us. Just stuff that we thought was cool that didn't quite fit the script.
It's just nice and easy. Just take it easy. Put that car in neutral. Let it coast
into the intersection as you let Sunglasses at Night just blast on your radio. Which this past weekend I realized is maybe the best song to come out of the 80s. I have been listening to it on repeat quite a bit. Also this week, we're going to have the added bonus of finally hearing Baron's blood story.
Yeah. You're gonna get it full frontal.
But so that we can stay on brand and on track, I'm going to share a very, very, very short fact of one of our characters from Refrigerators. So I'm going to share that fun fact, and then Baron is going to defend why he ate blood off of his floor 4 years ago. 5 years ago? 5 years ago.
You going to put on sunglasses to do it?
No. So Thomas More, who we talked about in the last episode, remember him? He was the one that invented the original refrigerator.
Not, I know him.
Not the electronic refrigerator, the motorized one with the Freon, not the one with arsenic, not any of those. Or what? Not arsenic. Ammonia.
Yeah.
The very first one, the one that was just a wooden box lined with tin and fur. We erroneously said that he was from Maryland. He's actually from my hometown of Trenton, New Jersey.
Oh.
He moved to Maryland at the age of 17.
Oh, okay.
His father was a Quaker from Philadelphia and married a non-Quaker. So they were expelled from the Quaker community in Philadelphia and found refuge in Trenton. That is where Thomas was born. And from an early age, learned the trade of carpentry, another thing that him and I have in common. And then eventually his father was accepted back into the community of Quakers in Trenton. And then I didn't find exactly why he moved to Maryland, probably for work, I would assume. But yeah, that's my fun fact. Thomas More, Trenton guy that moved to Maryland. I'm a Trenton guy that moved to Maryland. We both work with wood.
You saying you're related
to
Thomas More? Are you inferring this?
I think I'm the modern day Thomas More.
You got to invent something refrigerator.
We invented this podcast. I'm working on it.
This podcast is the refrigerator of podcasts.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it is.
Because it's cool.
Because it's cool. Okay, everybody.
I hope you've been preparing, because I think everyone's been waiting. I've been waiting.
There's no preparation necessary. I know the story like the back of my hand.
If you bring that shit to court, you're going to go to jail.
There's no jail to go to, because I have done nothing wrong.
Shame jail. You're about to get locked away in shame jail.
I feel
jail.
A little shame, okay? There's no way of getting around. There's a little bit of shame involved. But okay, just so everybody knows, this is where I'm coming from. So what ended up happening was... I got pretty drunk one night, and I passed out in my bed, which happened to be in the basement of this apartment, and I was roommating with another individual who had his brother staying with us at the time. Apparently, him and his brother, over the course of the night, had an altercation where sharp weapons were involved in said altercation. Apparently, I slept through... the police coming. I slept through the CSI. I slept through arrests.
Well, I don't think there's a CSI. I think that happens when someone dies.
Well, whatever. The cops forensics came. Team. There was still forensics.
No, there was no forensic. No, because they knew what the crime was.
Why didn't the cops wake me up? That's what I want to know.
That is a good question, honestly. That's
kind of weird, right?
I mean, I wasn't there either. I mean, I was there the next day, but yeah. I wasn't at the knife fight.
So this is,
I wasn't invited. I mean, did it get outside? Yeah, I guess if it wound up outside,
it got outside, yeah.
Well, then they didn't need to go in the house,
I guess.
Yeah. But if it happened in the house, maybe they would have swept the house or something. I don't know.
Anyway, so I slept through all this shit. I wake up the next morning. It doesn't look like blood. This is my chain of thoughts. Okay. It was cold. The blood had frozen into like blood cakes that were like solid on the floor.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna keep interrupting you. You didn't live in an igloo. Your house wasn't 30.
The blood coagulated.
I lived in that house for a little while. I didn't have icicles coming out of my nose.
I guess the blood coagulated.
Which is what blood does, which is your first clue.
Okay. Well, it wasn't my first, not to be. So my first thought was, oh, they just had chili night at the Mount Royal Tavern last night.
A real thing. They did have chili night every Tuesday.
Somebody fucking dumped chili all over my goddamn floor.
It's alarming that you guys frequented free chili night at the Mount Royal Tavern. Enough of that that's where you went.
I didn't, but said individual did.
Yeah, you're right. He like lived there for a while.
I did, not to like catch free chili usually or anything like that. Anyway, so I think it's some type of food, and I start texting you and the girl that I was dating at the time about it, and I'm kind of having fun with it. I'm like, man, this kind of looks.
You're taking
like,
pictures with it.
Yeah, I'm taking pictures. I'm doing
you're
like.
You're putting googly eyes on it.
Investigations with it, like Dexter.
I think you put like a little ruler up to it and sent me a picture of that. Which, by the way, just one more time, points to me believing that you already knew it was blood because you were doing the like CSI jokes.
And then I think. I started thinking, like, that doesn't really look like any food that I've seen.
Also, mind you, my first text back was, oh, that's blood. And maybe I've seen more blood than you.
Sir.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's blood.
I don't believe.
Like, that is totally blood.
I don't remember. I don't believe you.
Do you not believe or not remember?
I don't know. Either one. Both.
But yeah, I was like, oh, shit. I think my first text was something along the line. I don't remember verbatim, but I do remember the feelings of that day. And I was like, did something happen? And you're like, I don't know. I just woke up. Nobody's here. I was like, I think that's blood. And you're like, no, it's not.
It could be. So, and then I think like it's close to Halloween. I'm like, okay, did this guy play some kind of Halloween prank on me? Is this fake
oh,
blood?
Shut up.
I'm serious.
You went from, but you had already thought it was chili night.
I had thought, and then but the progression of thought was that doesn't look like food. Maybe it's fake blood. Because it kind of looks like blood. Maybe it's fake blood. It has to be fake blood. It has to be fake blood. It's not real blood. There's no way it could be real blood.
So you decided to taste fake blood.
So I decided to taste. I decided to taste it, which.
Which you told me you were going to do, and I said don't.
Which, in my defense, is the only way you could experience what type of substance that was without a total chemical analysis. You got a chemical analysis right in your mouth, buddy.
Guess what, buddy? It's called a tongue. I knew through a text photo. That it was blood. I didn't need to. I didn't even have to be in the room with it. Well, I remember I was still working at the foundry. I normally didn't try to let my phone distract me because it's a fucking foundry, but this was too good. And I remember everything step for step for step. And I remember when you finally sent a text, I'm going to eat it. And I think I out loud was like, no, no, no.
I don't remember any of that.
And then there was a pause. There was a pause.
Swayed me.
And then you wrote back, it's blood.
Yeah, I took a fork. I flaked some of it off. It came off in these weird little shards.
Oh, it flaked. Yeah, Baron, it's dried blood. And then
I popped it. Yeah, it was blood. Yeah.
No, say the whole sentence. You popped it.
I popped it in my mouth.
In your
and
mouth.
It dissolved into blood. And I realized what it was at that point.
All right.
Some of us are visual learners. Some of us are audio learners. I have to put things in my mouth to learn what they are.
Yeah.
That's just how like I experience the world.
Like a dog or a child. Like a child. Like an infant. Like a dog or an infant. Baron has to... That must make dating hard.
What dating?
Oh my God. All right.
Wah, wah. Anyway, that's the fucking blood story. Please sympathize with me. I'm not even going to put it like that. Just like, now you know my side of things. Maybe you can agree with me that what I did was a logical progression of actions to determine what the substance was.
Yeah, anyone out there, if you think Baron was justified in eating the floor blood of his roommate, please unsubscribe like and stop listening to us, because we don't want to be linked to you.
Speak for yourself. We're buds. We're two peas in a pod.
You guys should make a dating app together.
I'll make a podcast with you.
So I'm gonna bookend that with another super short fun fact, and then you're gonna share your dirty bits.
Okay.
So this one isn't necessarily about ice directly, but it has to do with ice cream, which you needed ice for, which involved the use and development of ice houses in early America. So in the later 18th century, to have ice cream, you needed ice. And so this fun fact takes place in 1970 when George Washington, who was at the time serving his first term as our first president.
George Washington?
Oh, yeah, that's wrong.
It's a very funky George Washington.
That's... Wow. All right. I wrote that super wrong.
Sometimes I listen.
Oh, I did. I have it later in my notes again. It's 1790. Yeah, sorry. I did the old switch'em. So it takes place in 1790 when George Washington was fulfilling his first role or his first term, fulfilling the role of the first term of our president. And he would frequent a nearby ice cream parlor, which first mind blower, those existed back then. You needed ice, and they would usually be connected to a source or have ice delivered. And in the summer of 1790 in particular, he spent $200 on ice cream alone for one summer. $200 in 1790, I did the conversion, it's about $5,500 today. So this man spent almost $6,000 on ice cream in one whole summer.
Little ice cream goblin.
I can't
problem.
I know. Do you think he took him out to eat the ice cream? But I can relate. I fucking love ice cream, and this made me like him a lot more.
I think we're gonna cover ice cream.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And also inadvertently, one last fun fact. I learned that the same day I read this, that our capital was originally in New York City. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, and then for a while,
I knew it was
10 years it was in Philly, following New York, and then finally in 1801 it was in D.C.
Was it in Baltimore at one point too, or they were thinking about it? Never mind.
No, they were thinking about somewhere else. Sorry, this came up too. It was D.C. or somewhere else, and then D.C. won. It was in Baltimore.
But guess what?
What?
We're the ice cream capital of the world, baby.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's true.
If I say it, then it's true.
I think, it's
somebody proved me wrong.
You got a fun fact for us? Ice cream king.
All right. I wouldn't say it's a fun fact. It's a short, another story of mine that I didn't have time to talk about in the original episode. And this is the story of John Gorey, who was, I would say, fairly influential in the ice making trade. And for some reason, I'm always drawn to these guys that, well, we'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out what happens to John Gorey.
Pull up a chair and, pull up next to the fire and listen to old Baron spin.
Get a bowl of ice cream.
Or blood.
Or blood. Let me take you back in time to the docks of Apalachicola, Florida in 1845. Smell the salt in the air drifting out of the Gulf. Hear the distant calls of seabirds.
Did you say 1845 or 1945?
1845.
Okay, 1845.
A physician by the name of Dr. John Gorey works tirelessly in his lab constructing an apparatus that he hoped would rip the ice monopoly away from the cold, unrelenting grip of one Frederick Tudor. This endeavor...
Don't make me do Frederick Tudor again.
He might pop up. This endeavor had not begun this way for John. John had begun his Floridian trials at the local marine hospital at the foot of beds of patients who were suffering from tropical diseases, being that these were men who were of the port-to-port variety. John realized early in his career that these diseases tended to flare up in the summer, which led him to the conclusion that hot, humid air equals malaria.
No, that's not what causes malaria, though. Isn't it mosquito bites?
Right. He didn't know that, though.
He thought it was just hot air.
Yeah, he thought it was hot air. in an attempt.
We were smarter back then.
It's kind of a funny coincidence, though, because before he started thinking, like, I need to cool this air down, he had tried these gauze curtains around his patients' beds, thinking that that would filter the air, not the malaria.
But it filtered out the mosquitoes.
Right. Which coincidentally led him to, like, a false positive on malaria outbreaks. It was kind of funny.
Hilarious.
Sometimes if you try, you stumble over the result of something that is kind of smart.
I think that's how medicine's supposed to happen.
Yeah. That's how they found out what blood tastes like.
Go, come on, keep going. Keep going. you're almost there.
John even tried fanning air over buckets filled with ice down on his patients as they lay in bed in a crude form of air conditioning. Here was the problem. Ice, under the rule of the Ice King, was a whopping $40 a pound in today's money if the ice boats happened to make it a stop in Apiquicola at all. John wanted to get from under the financial thumb of Tudor, but he also had the dream of creating a utopian society based on clean, cool air.
Hey, John, get over here, you bitch. You want some of this ice? $40 a bucket.
That's kind of steep, don't you think? I just... Like, think about the patients. Think about the people that were trying to help.
Yeah,
you.
No, I'm not going to think about that. I'm thinking about the money. I'm thinking about the $40 bucket.
Well, you're kind of a dick.
Yeah, no, I'm the dick. I'm the dick king. I mean, I'm the ice king. I'm not the king of dicks. I'm the king of ice.
But John, like, more importantly than the price point, John had this dream. He fully believed that if he could rid hot air from this society, we would have this utopian place that we could all live and frolic and be healthy constantly, and everything would be great. So John begins working on his own evaporative cooling machine based closely on principle to the one Jacob Perkins was working on roughly around the same time, which we touched on in the first episode.
Yeah, didn't we all know about Jacob Perkins murdered his partner, didn't he? Yeah,
well, that's the theory.
Yeah.
That's the InfoCast theory we're running with. In an 1844 article...
And if we say it, it's true.
In an 1844 article under the Commercial Advertiser, which is an Apiquicola paper, Apiquicola paper, I don't know. Under the nom de plume of Jenner, John describes his invention. Let the houses of warm countries be built with an equal regard to insulation, and alike labor and expense be incurred in moderating the temperature and lessening the moisture in the internal atmosphere, and the occupants would incur little or no risk from malaria. Atmospherical temperature determines, or at least greatly modifies, the character of our race.
What was that last part? our race?
Atmospherical temperature determines, or at least greatly modifies, the character of our race.
Uh-huh.
You search it for something there?
I mean, obviously I'm not searching. He said it.
He was fucking racist. We get it. He was a racist dick. Yes.
I'm not. I mean, he probably was. I'm going to say he probably was. But was.
Is that what you were getting at?
I just don't know why. Like, that was just like a curveball at the end. That race came in. Does he think that other races are immune to heat?
I'm just kind of assuming that he meant the human race in general. That's what I thought. But now that you mentioned that, he might have been just like saying white people.
I don't think people colloquially said the human race back then. I think when people in 1854 said race, they meant a very specific thing.
It could very well be. I don't know.
Especially in Florida.
Maybe. Now that you got me thinking about it, could be.
This is why I said anything at all. My wheels are spinning. If he believed that in his heart, why the fuck was he in Florida? If he really thought that, like, the white race was not built for that, like, region, move.
Because white people have to be everywhere, Sam. And they have to...
That's true. We do have to be everywhere.
Take over everything.
We have to own everything.
Manifest destiny, buddy.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I forgot.
Yeah. In 1845, Gorey leaves the noble pursuit of the medical trade to follow a nobler pursuit, getting some damn AC up in this bitch. Although his pursuit was extremely noble, the noblest, even, that John realized the only way he was going to fund any of this was to start dipping his toe into one of the most lucrative trades there were to trade. Ice making.
You better fucking not.
I'm God.
Swear to fucking God, Johnny, I'll fucking kill you.
I'm from Boston too now, and I am also making ice. In 1850, at a Bastille Day celebration in July 14th, 1850, in the dining room of the Regal Mansion House in Apalachicola, a French consulate was complaining of having to drink warm champagne. Much like a 19th century Kool-Aid man, it is the very moment that John and four servants burst in, carrying each a silver tray, and on each silver tray, a brick of ice, fabricated as if by magic by none other than John fucking Gorey.
Brick's a little too big to go in your drink.
That's fair.
It's great for a presentation, but like... No, I'm not going to say the French.
This brick, I could not.
Well, put why did he show up with bricks of ice? They won't fit in the glasses. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. He made a big. I'm assuming they're going to chip it.
Oh, now he's giving them work? He's giving them a chore?
Not them. He's got servants.
Oh, the other guys.
Yeah.
The ones that don't get malaria. You know what I mean?
The ones that don't need to worry about being.
The
hot.
Ones that don't have to be behind the gauze. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's.
Hey. Hey, I'm the Ice King. Shh, don't tell John I'm here at the party.
What are you doing here?
Hey, I'm here to tell you that ice, it's gonna make your dick smaller. The ice that John made,
I don't know.
It's cursed. It's cursed ice. A wizard made it. he had to make a deal with the devil. It's bad ice. It's gonna make your asshole turn inside out and start talking to you.
It looks like ice to me. It looks.
No, look. This is what ice looks. Oh, shit! It's just water. I put ice in my pocket and it melted and let me go get more ice from my water car. I'll be right back. Chick chick.
Okay, is that him unlocking his water car?
Yeah.
he's got an alarm on it.
He's rich. He's okay. The Ice King.
Okay. Anyway, Gorey advertised his machine as the first commercial machine to work for ice making or refrigeration. A ton of ice can be made on any part of the earth for less than $2. He was not without his critics, however. After this boastful entrance to his ice making wizardry, the New York Times described Gorey as a crank down in Apalachicola, Florida, who claims that he can make ice as good as God Almighty.
This ad brought to you by Freddy Tuda.
Spit in the face of God? Gorey could. You're damn well right. He could. Who was the Ice King now? Who was it? Who was it now?
Not you.
Getting funded.
Because I know how the story ends.
Getting funded, however, was another matter, and this would be the plague that would follow Gorey throughout the rest of his ice-making career. Investments that failed to come through. Prototypes that only worked part of the time. Maybe, or perhaps it was that Frederick Tudor.
Hey, you can't stand the cold, get out of the icebox, eh, Johnny, you motherfucker?
Although no direct correspondence was ever clearly preserved in any facet of history, Gorey constantly blamed Tudor for sabotaging his business dealings in order to preserve the ice trade. And who's to say that he's wrong?
I 100% believe that he did. Based off of, I think I mentioned it last time, that the guy that that wrote the book, basically like the book on the ice trade, called out Tudor for being like the equivalent of a drug dealer for ice.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, like, you know, reading between the lines, he was just like a kind of a cutthroat businessman. And so I totally see him trying to undermine whoever's going to like try to take his business.
I picture him up in the Tudor up in the offices of New York Times, like, yeah, that's good ice, huh? Good ice. How about you? You write that smear campaign on my buddy. John.
Freddie, you know I love you. I love you to death, like a cousin. I love you like a cousin. But you got to stop bringing all this ice up here. You make everything damp. You're like a walking puddle. Stop carrying the ice in your pockets, Freddie. You should know better than that.
Am I Freddie now?
This is falling apart so fast.
Anyway, so John, unfortunately, does not realize his dream, and he dies in 1855. But he does set the stage for other inventors to come along and build on his work. Being one of the first to discover how to mechanically manufacture ice, he was an important keystone in refrigeration history.
That's true.
And that's John Gore.
I have something related to American ice patents, except that it's not about American ice patents at all, but it's about ice patents in the Americas, I guess, rather.
Okay.
In 1637, and you know a little bit about this because I tried to fit it into the script and it just didn't work out. But now I have more about it. In 1637, Sir William Berkeley, governor of Virginia, by the way, at this time it was just a colony, so the state that is now Virginia was originally the colony of the British colony of Virginia, for anyone that doesn't know, before the Revolution. He was granted a patent by King Charles I during his tenure as the governor of Virginia to, quote-unquote, gather, make and take snow and ice and keep the same in such pits, caves, and cool places as he should see or think fit. So basically this gave him the monopoly in the British colonies of America on the sale of snow and ice. And also in Great Britain for 14 years.
So he was the British Ice King.
He was the Ice King before Tudor was the Ice King. He owned the rights to store ice somehow. Like, I still am having trouble imagining how you enforce that. Like, I guess if they found, I mean, you know, I guess taxes were crazy as shit back then. They had a whole war about it. But I guess if they discovered somebody was storing ice in an ice house, they would just tax them for doing that. He would get paid a royalty for someone else having ice, for possessing ice.
Excuse me, sir? Sir?
Yeah?
What you got in the hut over there?
Oh, what you got? Nothing.
You got ice in there?
It's looks pornography. Hard.
Looks kind of icy. It's
pornography about the bestiality, which I don't think's illegal yet. Also, I'm slowly becoming from New York.
look, can we just have a look in there? And if it's bestiality, it's all good.
Oh, I guess if you're into that stuff, you dirty pervert.
Yeah, but if it's got ice, we gotta charge you a little bit.
Listen, it's ice. It's ice. I'll give you half a cube to get out of here.
Half a cube.
Half a cube. A whole half a cube.
I'd rather just have the taxes. Honestly.
I'm afraid I'm gonna have to ask you to leave. I guess politely, because I'm British.
That's very nice of you. I think actually I'm gonna take your suggestion and just leave.
And take the ice cube. Oh, even better. Okay, awesome. Well, which works out because the ice cube's already turned into ice. Yeah,
we worked it out.
So I found this fun fact amidst many other facts, obviously, and it made me kind of curious who this guy was. How did he get this patent? All this stuff. So I kind of did some digging into his life. So much like the George Washington ice cream fact, this isn't necessarily on brand for refrigerators or ice boxes, but it's nonetheless, it is very interesting. So this guy was a fucking playwright turned governor after being appointed by King Charles I, the same guy who gave him the patent, but ultimately he failed as a governor after failing to diversify the colony's economics, which I guess like part, like he still had to kind of persuade people into thinking that he, like, they didn't just give it out to him like a new car, like, or like a pony. He had to be like, oh yeah, I'd be a great governor. I'd diversify the economy and it'd be great. And I'll just do a great fucking job over there in jolly old America. Diversify the shit out of that economy. Shakespeare, tea, yada yada.
There wasn't an election or anything. It was just,
believe it or not, they didn't have elections back then. Right,
because of the king and everything.
Because of the king monarchies and stuff. So yeah, he failed to diversify the economy, and even worse, he failed at convincing settlers of the colony that they were adequately protected from Indian attacks, which was part of how they, you know, tried to persuade people to become members of these colonies, to go to migrate from Britain to the colonies to populate them, was you had to convince them of their safety. And he failed to do that because Berkeley enacted, and this makes him a good person, but he enacted friendly policies toward the Native Americans, which backfired when they just started killing the colonizers.
They were like, yeah, that's nice. Fuck you.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We will totally not shoot you. Try very hard to get you off our land. Yes, we will totally do that. Wink, wink. So this led to a revolt by some of the planters in 1676, led by Nathaniel Bacon, which this is also, I don't know if this is funny to anyone else, but it became known pretty infamously as Bacon's Rebellion. In the aftermath, King Charles II, by the way, in this time, King Charles I was beheaded because there was a whole revolt that happened. There was a civil war that happened a little bit after this. I think I said 1776. Yeah, 1676. They had a civil war. King Charles I was beheaded. King Charles II, I think the name was a coincidence. It's a first name. I don't think that they were really, it's not like they killed King Charles and was like, your nephew gets to be king now. I think it's a different Charles.
Maybe his head grew into another person.
No, it's two heads. In the aftermath, King Charles II was angered by the retribution. Like, so when the dust settled, he was like, who the fuck is this guy Berkeley in Virginia that doesn't know how to run a colony? Because he didn't. But this isn't even the first example of Berkeley being a little chicken shit. As most people probably don't know, England had a civil war in 1642 between the Royalists and the Parliamentarians. By the way, the Parliamentarians were also called the Roundheads, which is really fun. Yeah, it's a funny name, but it was just because they shaved their heads in rebellion against like having long hair, which I guess was like the way to make yourself look like a royalist. What's the word I'm looking for? Signify yourself as a royalist.
Yeah, as an elitist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they shaved their heads and they became Roundheads because I guess funny nicknames were like cool back then. And so when the Parliamentarians seemed to be successful in their rebellion, Berkeley, who was a royalist and was at the time already governor, offered an asylum to in Virginia to gentlemen of the royalist side as like a safe haven. Upon learning this, however, Parliament dispatched a small fleet to the colony, and Berkeley was again unable to offer any resistance whatsoever to any impending force, and was forced at gunpoint to resign as governor, but then allowed to remain on his plantation as a private citizen.
Yeah, well, what the fuck? I mean,
they cucked him. They cucked him as governor.
In his defense, though, what are you going to do, like, if the British military is coming down on your colony?
He's supposed to have a whole armed, like, situation. This is colonizer time.
They all
this
got
is
killed by the Americans. Yeah.
This was like, it was wrong. Like, I don't want to paint a picture that I'm like a colonist sympathizer. It was very terrible, but like, it was hard. If you were going to come colonize the new world, you better come with your fucking guns loaded. Like, it was hard living. And this guy, I think, tried to just sell everyone on like the benefits of theater. And like, didn't
he
think
like
he had
the artistic. Yeah, he out in Virginia.
He was like the fucking hippie British guy. Like, whoa, man, put down the bow and arrow. Let's just have a fucking improv rep. You know, I'm gonna say a word. You say a word. Periscope. Oh, you fucking scalped my mate. Oh, that's not how the game works.
Does it rhyme with Periscope?
Oh, no. But then at the Restoration, which was the end of the Civil War in 1660, man, that's a long Civil War. He was reappointed governor, only to later be stripped of governor again when King Charles I. He made it through the whole first Civil War.
Right. And then he got reappointed by who?
He later got... No. So King Charles I, if I'm understanding this correctly, King Charles I appointed him governor, and then there's a civil war, and the royalists won the civil war. So King Charles I came out the other side, still in control.
Oh, okay.
Reappointed him, and then somewhere along the lines, I'm not a British historian. This is all kind of like peripheral to my research on refrigerators. But it seems like somewhere along the lines, King Charles got dethroned, beheaded, and then there's a King Charles II. I don't know if there's any relation there. I don't think so. I think it's just like a name synchronicity. And then he finally was like, dude, you're not governor anymore. And then I think at that point, Sir Berkeley had no other recourse but to go, oh, good move. Yes. No, this has cool. been a terrible endeavor for everyone involved. Virtually every soldier that you've sent here has been killed, and we are starving.
Do you think the second time they tried to appoint him, or they appointed him as governor, it was like, no,
you don't have to. oh no, shit. Actually, I wanted to be governor of Broadway.
So do you think he was just like, after all that, he was just like, ice is so much easier to govern.
What?
I'm just going to be the ice governor.
I think he lost the patents when he was dethroned as governor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I missed that part. I thought maybe he became the ice guy after all the governor stuff happened in Virginia.
Actually, you know what? I don't have it in my notes, but I do remember that they got renewed after the 14 years. He managed to get the patents renewed.
Yeah.
But I imagine once you're governor, it's harder to enforce it.
Okay.
So he just like went door to door and he's like, you're not stowing ice, are you? If you store on ice, you got to pay old Berkeley a 10 cent. And they're like, get out of here. And he's like, oh, very good. Get the fuck off my property.
Bigger things to worry about.
Get the fuck off my property or blow your head off. All right, very good, sir. Have a nice day, sir. Here's a flyer to my one-man show down at the co-op. It's called How to Not Be a Governor, starring Sir Berkeley. I'm sure you're familiar.
That was Dirty Bits for Refrigerators.
That was Dirty Hope Bits for Refrigerators.
And a little bit of a personal story thrown in.
Oh, yeah. That was Dirty Bits, Refrigerators, plus Baron's Blood Story. That would be the title of this episode.
Someday, no, maybe...
Refrigerators, Dirty Bits, plus Baron 8 Blood.
Someday, maybe I would like to have a story that we could talk about that's not me doing that. And, like Baron did an adult thing. Baron Baron paid his taxes. I paid my taxes a couple of months ago.
Baron did an adult thing. Wow. We heard you. You paid your taxes. Yeah, congrats.
I have a water bill.
I just filed an extension online. That's my suit. That's my soft core protest to taxes.
That's the financial equivalent of eating blood.
Nope.
I'm going with that. I don't know what it means.
All right, find us on social media. I'm InfoCast5000 on Instagram.
Yeah, and I'm also InfoCast5000@gmail.com. And stay tuned, everybody, because we are working on a website. And
we are
trying to make it pretty.
And maybe a shirt?
Oh, really?
Oh,
really?
Maybe.
Oh, really?
Maybe a shirt.
Can it say Governor of Ice on it?
We'll figure out what a good joke is for it. Maybe not Governor of Ice. But definitely keep an eye out. And speaking of keep an eye out, if you want to see a series of failed reels that I tried to make on Instagram, check out Instagram. I thought I had a good grasp. I thought I was internet literate. I'm not the oldest person in the world, but holy shit, did I not do a good job posting my first reel. So
we are willing to, I think at this point, hire 12-year-old
if they'll work
for to do our media for us, right?
Yeah, in between them playing Fortnite and...
Yeah, we'll pay you in ice.
Yeah, we'll pay you in ice.
Got so much ice.
Don't tell Sir Berkeley.
All
okay,
right.
Bye.
Bye. See you.